Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all over print button downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They of course have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello there and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm Adam Russell. I was muted.
I was like, am I on the right podcast? Hey, it's Nick Ambarian. What's up, everyone?
Hey, it's Mike Forster, and I am no Jedi, but I did not mute my mic. So I guess I got a leg up there, Adam the Skull.
Yeah, at least one leg. Maybe like some spider legs.
Oh.
Who knows?
Oh,
who knows? Related character.
I like it. What's up, guys?
Hi, dudes. How are you?
Hey.
You guys are both back from tour, and I just have to say it is so lovely to see you in your own space again. Not that I didn't love the tour bus or the random venue that you guys were at, but I just have to say it's so nice having you guys back.
Things are just admittedly so much harder when we're on tour. And when we're both on tour, good Lord.
Yeah. Mm. It's a nightmare. Mm. I'm unfortunately leaving for tour in a matter of hours to go back on another leg of the Yellow Card tour, which will be great. But I was just getting settled back in. My wife and I were just talking about how stuff was like kind of getting back to normal. And here we are again. But it's only like a week and a half. So not too bad.
Not bad.
Before you go on tour again.
Well, there'll be a break.
Sure.
And as yet unannounced thing is happening later in the year.
I don't know anything about that.
But we also have Star Cruiser. Mike knows nothing.
I don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about any graphics that I've been making for it or anything like that. So, yes.
No. So, that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And before we know it, it's the end of the year. And then, you know how that is. It's just all piling up.
We are going to space, though. I mean, that's going to be...
all these things.
Right. One last space trip, end of September.
Oh.
It's going to be good.
Oh.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. It's going to be very, very excited about that.
You know what else is great?
Yeah.
The forthcoming live action series on Disney Plus, all around our dearly beloved Ahsoka.
My
just a couple weeks, 2 weeks from today at the time of this recording.
My favorite Togruta.
There she is.
Yeah, there she is right there. She's everywhere. She's on my shirt. She's in our hearts. She's in our minds. She's in our thoughts.
She's on my thumb.
So we're gonna talk about her today just as a character. We're gonna answer for anyone who's only seen a couple episodes of live action, who's seen the Rosario Dawson version of Ahsoka. We're gonna talk about who Ahsoka is. For anyone else who knows Ahsoka well, this will be fun anyway, because we'll talk about how much we love her, and we'll engage with the patrons, and it'll be a good time. That's the plan.
And we're just trying to get pumped.
That's the thing, yeah.
It's coming sooner than later.
Yeah, just trying to get ready for this, like, monumental time in Star Wars history.
The latest trailer was beyond awesome. Like, we all agree on that.
I'm pumped.
Right? Like, the first one was awesome. And I think now we're kind of getting into that hype stuff. I was just like shocked at the amount of like lightsabers in the character posters that they just dropped. I'm like,
yeah.
For people that were concerned that there weren't enough lightsabers in the previous shows, maybe like Andor, everyone's got a lightsaber now. So, you know, like
it's like a straight up Macquarie concept art piece right here.
100%. Everyone's got a lightsaber. And
Oprah.
Even my new crush. Chinhati.
You get a new crush every Star Wars show, don't you?
It is exhausting.
This is a new era. This is a new era of Star Wars where attractive people are getting cast.
That's true. That's true. Okay. So now, so where are we at, Nick? I mean, we're still waiting on Bix to give you a call. She'll call, but then...
It's not happened as of now.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to...
Very sorry.
...to Chinhati, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Which is probably Haiti, but let's just, you know...
Either way. Sure. Either way is fine.
Yeah. Sure. Let's go for it.
So we're going to do this kind of like we did the Leia character profile kind of thing, where we'll give you like stolen plans on the in-universe, out-of-universe stuff, you know, notable dates and things that happened in the character's life. But we'll also talk about the character, who she means to us, and what kind of the bigger implications are for all of Star Wars, again, for people who haven't watched Clone Wars and they don't understand just how significant this character is in shaping the character arcs of other live-action Star Wars characters, notably Anakin Skywalker. It's a big deal. So that's what we're here to do.
Oh,
so before we get into stolen plans, let's just mention kind of the basics for folks. I don't feel like this falls into stolen plans necessarily, but Ahsoka Tano, for anyone who only knows her, again, from two episodes of Rosario Dawson. She is, what would you guys say? Like, is there another more beloved character in animation than her?
That was created new for animation? No. Like, I think Anakin Skywalker really rounded that character out in ways we never saw coming just from the prequels. But yeah, Ahsoka, still top-notch. But we're now Bo-Katan, Sabine, we're going to see a lot more of these animated characters.
Yeah.
I would say, in terms of like marketing goes, Ahsoka Tano has broken that barrier of, honestly, like I will give a ton of credit to friend of the show, Ashley Eckstein, for really like embodying, taking this character into the world outside of animation, right? And I think when we think about Ahsoka Tano and when, you know, you guys are Star Wars people for your other people who are not totally Star Wars people. And I would get people that would text me during The Mandalorian. And I got a text when they go to Caladan and, you know, Ahsoka shows up. And people would text me and be like, I feel like this character is a big deal because she has two white lightsabers. Like, can you explain to me what's going on? And so I would kind of like just, I didn't want to like give... You know, I don't want to sit there and fire hose somebody and be like, well, what's happening? You know, but I was like, do you remember when she told Din that she's seen the darkness full, you know, consume a fully trained Jedi Knight? And they're like, yeah, who is that? I'm like, Anakin Skywalker. And they're like, wait, what? And I go, yes, Anakin had a Padawan before he became Darth Vader, and that's Ahsoka Tano. And you could just almost like a frustration of how many people that weren't into animation, right, are like, where do I learn about this? And I'm like,
you have to watch cartoons.
You better buckle up.
Buckle
because
up, baby.
you got a lot of stuff to watch. But regardless, the frustration of wanting to explain the importance of this character without watching Clone Wars, Rebels, Tales of the Jedi, like there's so much information about her and books and novels and all that kind of stuff is amazing. So like in a way, it's almost heartbreaking the amount of people that are going to watch this show because of the lightsabers. And hopefully we're going to bridge the gap a little bit between some flashbacks, maybe not completely just like reshooting things in live action, but
right.
I'm hoping the average fan will be able to understand the weight of how rad it is that this character is getting her own show. So
for sure. And speaking of things that may or may not happen next week, we're going to do something really fun. So we won't get too into speculating. We'll try to avoid speculating entirely on this one because next week is basically all speculation. We're going to break tradition.
We're just breaking barriers. We're breaking
for fun,
barriers.
For the sake of fun.
And you broke it last week too.
Yeah. Look at this. No rules. It's like Outback Steakhouse.
This show is off the rails now.
People change, okay? Podcast change.
So Ahsoka, like we keep mentioning, was first seen in Star Wars animation in 2008 and brought to live action finally, what was it, 2019? Yeah? Or is it 2020? Either way.
I think it was 2020.
She appeared in The Mandalorian, the episode The Jedi, aptly named. Also a little curveball. Now with her own spinoff series, like we said, coming 2 weeks from today, August 23rd, 2023, this was a character that George Lucas conceived as, according to him, someone that, a female hero, a role model, a character that he wanted to write and create for his daughters.
Legit. So the, thank you, George.
Just the very idea of Anakin having a Padawan was something that he kind of just dropped on Dave Filoni and the other folks in a very like, oh, you know, Anakin has a Padawan, kind of, you know, just like, oh, you know, Darth Vader's Luke's father, like just one of those classic Lucas stories where he just kind of dropped that knowledge. And then Dave Filoni apparently ran with that on a napkin, you know, conceptualize a little bit of the look of Ahsoka, and it all went from there. And they wrote her together, and then the whole writing team wrote the Clone Wars. And here we are years later with this fully fleshed out character that's now so beloved. And I don't know if she was meant to be kind of the central character of the Clone Wars, but by the end, I felt like the day that I finished the Clone Wars series, that's what hit me. Like, oh, this is, because we interviewed Ashley that day, and I thought, wow, yeah, she is the central character of the Clone Wars. Even though they're the obvious co-stars, mm-hmm. the biggest story arc is hers, right?
Yeah, twice over. I mean, when it ended on season 5, it was her story. And then when it came back for season 7, it was her story.
Yeah. And arguably the most important, not just because of the kind of new places they went with storytelling, but like we said before, the implications of her story on other characters, specifically Anakin and his turn to the dark side, all the stuff that fills in the gaps and helps not justify, but, you know, give a little deeper background, a little deeper understanding of why he turned to the dark side, and not just for romance, not just for jealousy, but there was all of this deep stuff that was very complex. And we all owe all that to a cartoon, the emotional heart of Star Wars, of the Clone Wars and Star Wars animation, Ahsoka Tano.
And for her to, as a character, we've got to also look at the fact of, like, she was one of the last Padawans to be trained by the Council, right?
Yeah.
And so when you think about her as a character, she kind of embodies, I think in some ways, like, she's actually closest to Qui-Gon Jinn, in the sense of, like, understanding that the Jedi were flawed, their foundation was flawed, that her walking away, being slightly kicked out, represented where Luke ends up with the Jedi as well. And so it's interesting that we're seeing her as this previous version of where I think Luke ended up in The Last Jedi. So it's interesting when you look at the parallels between where she is compared to other Jedi Masters. And I think it's her story is incredibly important because she's going to represent too where the Jedi exist in this plane. Kanan losing his, you know, kind of losing his way, refining it through the Force. But again, being mostly a Padawan, he never really got to finish his training. That's always a part of him. But Ahsoka almost like becomes the trainer. And then obviously we're going to see more of that in the show with Sabine. So it's super exciting for people that, again, don't understand the background. She actually represents the Jedi at this point, besides where Luke is in this section. And so we saw their differences a little bit of Luke still having this idea that, like, we can rebuild the Jedi Order. And she kind of like looks at him and is like, you sure about that? Are you sure about that? And for her own reason, that's kind of like, you're rebuilding it in a model possibly that goes down the same track as where they ended up, right? And so we look at it in terms of like what happened in The Force Awakens. We see the Burning Temple. All of these things almost like calls back to Coruscant, End of the Clone Wars. Like Ahsoka Tano is truly an embodiment of where the Jedi philosophically, actually where she broke with them and where the Order could exist moving
where
forward.
Where it belongs.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Basically what you're saying, I feel like it's sparking things in my head. I mean, Luke doesn't know that she was framed and the Jedi turned their back on her and that Anakin was there, you know, like canonically, at least on screen, we don't know that Luke knows that. So of course he would go down the path of the sacred Jedi text and I want to rebuild the Council. Meanwhile, Ahsoka's out there the entire time. And it's just like, whoa, 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 whoa. We can't do this. We can't go down this road again.
Yeah.
There are multitudes.
Oh, I like it.
Hey, everyone. We want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad, all-over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
So let's do some stolen plans and then talk a little deeper. And there's a lot to talk about within stolen plans as well, because I have kind of, like I said, notable events throughout her life in universe here. So let's go ahead and do that right now.
What have you done with those plans?
Ahsoka Tano, the character, the animated character, debuted in 2008, like I said, August 15th, with the Clone Wars theatrical release, the feature film that was originally conceived as episodes of television, but Lucas decided, hey, this could be a movie. So they released it theatrically. Did any of you guys see it in the theater? We've talked about this before, right?
No, I didn't.
I was aware of it, but I didn't see it. Didn't catch up with animation until years later. We've all talked about this quite a bit. Voiced by Ashley Eckstein, like we keep mentioning, friend of the pod. She's also, like we keep saying, like such a mouthpiece for the philosophy and like the kind of the heart of Ahsoka in real life. And she has said over and over and over that she aspires to be a real-life Ahsoka Tano. So in so many ways, despite Rosario now carrying the torch in live action, Ashley really is Ahsoka. I mean, it's her voice. She does it up a little bit for the voice, but it's her voice. It's such an interesting thing to talk to her and hear that voice. Rosario Dawson, like we said, played her in live action, starting in The Mandalorian, then the Book of Boba Fett, and now she'll get the full series with Ahsoka. In-universe, though, and with these stolen plans here, the species, Ahsoka's species, is Togruta. They're from a planet called Shili, which I just learned today is in the expansion region. Didn't know that was a thing. Ooh. Kind of between the inner and mid-rim. Mm. It would be east, if you want to look at the galaxy, in a north, south, east, west kind of way.
I feel like once a week I search how Togruta's age, because I'm like, this is very relevant to the story and how long we have Ahsoka. And I looked again today and I feel like something for the first time popped up. I don't know if the article was new or not, but it did say that, and I don't even know if it's canon, but it did say something along the lines of Togrutas that are like strong in the Force could live up to 200 years.
Oh,
but their average lifespan is,
thank the Force.
Oh. Is sort of humanoid, like 94 or so.
Yeah.
So even so, a 200-year-old Ahsoka is quarter way through her life as we know her, right?
She's going to find Rey. They're going to help train the new Jedi. I mean,
Always just said no speculation.
Yeah, she won't even be at her midlife crisis by the time the sequel trilogy happens. She's got plenty of time.
Based on what she's gone through, she's had plenty of midlife crises, right? I feel like. I would say probably the most famous Togruta outside of Ahsoka herself. Shaak Ti. Is that a safe assumption?
She was the first one on screen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We see more of her family in Tales of the Jedi, but yeah. Shaak Ti, number two.
And we find out, of course, through that great little clip that she's had the Force since she was young. She was
a baby.
It was very evident that she was blessed with the Force.
Like we mentioned, Jedi Padawan to Anakin Skywalker, his one and only Padawan, as far as we know. She was a commander in the Grand Army of the Republic, like a lot of Jedi and Padawans. I always thought this was interesting, and like some of the language, because I watched sort of through the half of the Disney Plus Essential Ahsoka episodes, and there's some season one stuff, and the way they refer to her as a Jedi sometimes, and then a Jedi youngling sometimes. They start calling her sir, they start calling her commander. Like, I wonder how fleshed out all of that is between Filoni and Lucas in terms of ranks and stuff in the Republic. You know, it's interesting stuff. I don't know. I digress.
I don't really know enough about real military, you know, levels of who. So whatever they say, you know, sounds good to me.
She was born 36 BBY before the Battle of Yavin. So that would be 5 years. She's 5 years younger than Anakin. So in 33 BBY, she was discovered by Plo Koon, brought to Coruscant. Does it actually show Plo meet her at the end of the Tales of the Jedi episode, or is it just kind of the prequel to that with the village finding out that she was sensitive as a baby?
Am I crazy, or is that in the Clone Wars?
Well, there's the moment in the credits of The Gathering, Season 5, Episode 6, where it's doing like flashes of Padawans and young Force users all around, and there's the brief moment where he bends down and kind of like grabs her hand or whatever.
Oh, that's right.
But I don't think it's in Tales of the Jedi at all.
I don't think so either. I think that was just it was just Anakin preparing her to blast her way out of her own platoon. Oh, too soon?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So when she was 14 in 22 BBY, that's when she became Anakin's Padawan, angsty little teen. And that was the vibe with the character. They wanted her to be kind of annoying. It rubbed some people the wrong way. We'll talk about that later. But she was a little bratty teenager. The next year, at the age of 15, like think about what this character goes through in just these few short years. The next year, on Mortis, there's an episode of the Clone Wars. There's an arc of the Clone Wars where they go to this place that is like kind of like a spiritual center to realm. The Force, a realm, yeah. And there's this very biblical sort of father-son, Holy Spirit thing in a way, father-son, daughter in the Force. And in this crazy Force experience, Ahsoka actually literally dies at the age of 15, was then brought back to life by one of the characters. We won't go too deep into this. But again, 15 years old. The next year, 20 BBY, when she's 16, that's when, I'm going notable moments here. She, Anakin, and Obi-Wan actually trained the Rebel Cell on a planet called Onderon, which ironically would become one of the first Rebel Cells to fight the Empire, led by Saw Gerrera. So she's just woven all through this story, all these important things. She's here for all this amazing stuff. And that Mortis arc, man, I don't know if this is the episode to convince people to watch animation if they haven't, but that shit, the foreshadowing, like all the stuff that Anakin goes through, I like, no spoilers, but dude.
I mean, we should spoil a little bit. I feel like
there's a vision of him becoming Darth Vader that he has to grapple with, him turning and
like how would you say it? Like he sheds like almost like this like Force energy that he's fighting with, and it's literally Vader's like silhouette coming out. It's incredible.
Yeah,
but also I think the Mortis arc for me was the set of episodes that I remember I had to watch again because I was like, is this Star Wars? Like, what is this? And I think that was the show that was like, damn, Clone Wars are on. Something else, like
it's a big swing.
This is making me feel different.
It's a real
about
big
Star
swing
Wars,
that arc.
That I think would later probably. I think the biggest echo, of course, is like getting into the world between worlds and all of that stuff.
Another big swing.
Another part with Ahsoka Tano involved. So I think when you look at it again, like there's, and we'll continue on with this, but like it's one of those things where like it almost seems like at this point, after the Clone Wars came out, Star Wars. Everyone thinks Luke Skywalker, of course, naturally. Dude, Ahsoka Tano is running parallel along with Luke Skywalker in this whole thing, which is incredible.
Yeah. I hope this is just the beginning of so much more stuff with the series coming on that level. The next year, 19 BBY, everything starts to hit the fan. This is when the galaxy turns, right? This is when Anakin turns everything. Like the whole. This is when the Empire is born, 19 BBY. She was expelled from the Jedi Order. Big spoiler, sorry. There's this. What was the series finale at the time? Right. Incredible arc that ends. It's one of those just like, man, it feels good to cry kind of things. It's just so emotionally brutal and heavy. You can't. It's like I just want to keep going back to it and keep experiencing the trauma over again because it's so well done. I watched it today and bawled my eyes out in my living room. While the FedEx guy came and the dogs barked. It was weird.
He was like, oh, man. He's like, final episode of season four.
Here's your package, dude. I understand. Yeah.
I feel you, man.
So 17, expelled by the Jedi Order, and then is asked to come back, says no, leaves. We then come back in season 7 because there's all this downtime. Come back, same year, also 19 BBY. She then, how much do we give away? Do we just say it all?
I mean, say enough to get someone to be like, all right, this sounds dope. I want to watch this. They're not going to, but like they should. And I hope
so. She comes back. Maul comes back. Darth Maul is just Maul in the animated shit.
What?
He's back. He's got control over Mandalore. She participates in this battle called the Siege of Mandalore to basically dethrone him. And
but kind of teams up with him.
Yeah.
Like, again, Jedi, throw the old Jedi ways out.
Yeah.
You know, dance with the darkness. Here we go again, right?
Well, that leads to the next thing is Order 66 happening all together at the same time. And if nothing else, if you're lazy and you don't want to see janky 2008 animation, you just want to skip right to the action. Season 7, you could probably watch the last 2/3 of the Clone Wars all together, you know, six sure. episodes, whatever, and get some of the best Star Wars you've ever seen. Number one, because the characters are great, but two, the way they weave it within, Revenge of the Sith is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because we never see a live action Ahsoka during the prequels, but they make it all work so well. Like the game, like the story basket weaving that they do to show like where she is, where when other stuff is going on with Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor, it's a masterclass, dude. It's insane.
And if you've seen The Mandalorian now and you have gained some knowledge and you've already seen Revenge of the Sith, those last couple episodes of season 7 of the Clone Wars, I mean, you get enriched. You get enriched story of and background of Bo-Katan, Mandalore, Ahsoka. It's really crazy the amount of time, because that came out also in 2020, right? I want to say.
That sounds right.
Season 7 of Clone Wars. I just remember having stuff to watch during the pandemic. So I think it
2019?
Was 2019. Are you sure?
Was it really?
I think it came out during the pandemic.
Or the very beginning, because did it start holidays 2019? Because I know it was at the beginning of the pandemic. We interviewed Ashley.
I feel like it ended around like May the 4th.
It ended on May 4th, 2020. Mm-hmm.
You guys owe me money? I forgot to bet.
$1,000.
I'll give you one mango cart.
So, yeah, Nick, like you're saying, it's not just Ahsoka, that final season. Mm-hmm. It's like a greatest hits of everything that matters that's now coming to live action. So just watch it. If you haven't, just do yourself a favor. Get over cartoons. Watch it.
Well, and that part of it, too, of finally getting the saddest part. And well, I don't know. It's like it's all sad. But for her to be brought back, I guess like we're going to spoil a little bit, but like she does get brought back into the Republic, right? Like no longer excommunicated. We know the story of her and the Martez sisters. Mm-hmm. There's all this stuff that goes on. And then for her to be brought back and she becomes the leader, the general of the 332nd, it's like this beautiful moment of like where, and like you said, Adam, like where Anakin goes and why he wasn't able to come back. It's literally one of these things where you can't help but be like, this character, in regards to like what you think has happened, a character who is truly amazing that she became the character that she does and the reason that she acts. I think there's people who are confused almost by her stoicism of being like, well, why isn't she, you know, she does all these like flippy, cool acrobatics. Like she has, you know, she's not overly expressive. She's, you know, she is stoic in that regard. And then you see all this stuff that she's gone through in her life, kind of easy to understand exactly why we as fans see her the way that she does, but why it would be confusing for someone else who's like, what does this character do? Why is this character important? And I think we're going to get to some of that. I think we're going to get to some of that in the show. So that's something to think about.
Yeah. I'm going to try not to overthink it.
Don't.
Too excited.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
So Order 66 happens. She goes into hiding. We don't see her on screen again for 25 years. She appears in Rebels. This is the thing we haven't talked about so much yet. She's a big part of the Rebels series. She doesn't come in until season 2. Yeah.
Well, she also takes out if we're going to talk the Tales of the Jedi, when she was in hiding, right? Remember?
Yes.
And she takes out that Inquisitor, which was an awesome episode.
Yes.
And she uses the Force and stops that big hay bale from crushing that guy. And
yeah, awesome stuff.
Nice little treat right there for us. Thanks, Filoni.
But all that stuff happens very much like on the fringes in hiding because, like all the rest of the Jedi, she's being hunted. So she's out there hiding until she feels compelled to come back. Based on, speaking of Tales of the Jedi, a brief conversation she had with Bail Organa, they don't say specifically when it is, but it's right after Padme's funeral. Basically, like...
That was an episode.
Hit me up, you know, or I'll hit you up if I need you. And this finally all comes together at some point, not long before the Battle of Yavin. She's 31 at the time. She starts to appear as by codename Fulcrum. No face on screen. There's a logo. People figured it out at the time.
What is the logo, Adam? What is the logo?
The logo is from her face markings, if you look at it.
Dang. Split that thing in half. Oh, my gosh. It's Ahsoka's face.
Pew.
There's going to be someone who's going to listen to this and be like, wait.
I thought they got it from Nick's thumb.
Right. I thought it was on the back of Adam's base.
The next year, she actually faces off with Darth Vader in Rebels. There's an arc called Twilight of the Apprentice. It is so heavy. It's right up there with, like, for the Obi-Wan series fans, for the duel, the rematch between Vader and Obi-Wan, it's like neck and neck. It's right there emotionally. It's just so good.
For all the people that gave Ryan, that continue, which, by the way, you should absolutely keep this up. If you're watching this and you know, you have continued to give Ryan Key a lot of shit for not watching Rebels, we can assure you at this point, podmate Ryan Key, that he's on his way. And we're on our group chat. He's like, dang, dude, like, I love this show. I don't know what took me so long. And we're like, what episode are you on? And he's like, on episode 6 of season 2. And we're like, yeah. Just wait. And I can't wait for him to like hit Twilight of the Apprentice and be like,
yes.
Oh my Qui-Gon. This is amazing.
Yeah.
So
that was a good text to get when he basically was like, Rebels is so good. I'm like, oh, you're watching it.
Wow.
That's amazing.
The next year, Twilight of the Apprentice is the finale of that season, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And a lot happens in that episode in regards to how we know Rebels from there. It's
Kanan
getting blinded. It's Ezra losing his lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ahsoka cracking Vader's helmet on the other side versus what...
Kind of also assume that she died.
That's the...
Right?
That's true. The thing.
True.
So...
Very true.
Heavy spoiler territory here. We assume that she dies because there's this huge battle going on, and she basically stays there and continues to fight Vader for everyone else to escape. Season finale, heavy as hell. And then she isn't seen again until, canonically, 2 years later. Ezra, via some stuff, God, we'll just say it all. There's this thing called the World Between Worlds, which is essentially like an interdimensional, time-space portal kind of... You know, imagine the old analogy with folding the paper to show how a wormhole works. This is kind of a version of what the World Between Worlds is. And Ezra Bridger can see, main character of Rebels, can see different events in time. We don't know specifically if they're relevant to him or to just the Force and the evolution of the Force in this era that he's part of. But one of those moments is Ahsoka fighting Vader. He goes through this portal, pulls her through to save her life, and that's how she comes back to Rebels. That's how she continues on in the story. So, I mean, by that logic, like, we have to assume she would have died otherwise, right? And they have that conversation that essentially...
So our stream chat is saying that we see Ahsoka walk away at the end of that. Do you guys...
What?
Yeah.
A bunch of people are saying it.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, I've never seen that.
We talked about this...
Post-credits.
It's in the episode? I'm looking this up right now.
Yeah.
You know what? I've about had enough of this.
I like learning new stuff, but I...
There's some ambiguity. I feel like we've talked about this, right?
Also, like, learning new stuff. Like, I, for some reason, never saw Quinlan Voss in The Phantom Menace.
Yeah. He's sitting...
Cool.
He's sitting down around, what's his face? Watto, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's cool. All right.
That I know.
Yeah, but everything's fine.
Okay, well, even if she walks out, the implication is, like, they don't see her for 2 years. Like, mm-hmm. she may have walked out and died... just in the fields of Malachor, you know, just out in the dust. Who knows? Like, she didn't come back to the Rebels crew and the Ghost. Right? That's...
I'm looking this
that
up
That should
right
say
now.
Enough about it.
Our patrons are on it. And I gotta say, I mean, yeah, it's very sad. All of this stuff happens.
Nate in the Patreon Discord saying, it's subtle. You see her at the bottom. Yep, physics buddy Joe doing a little screenshot there. Yeah, that certainly is her.
Wow.
I guess.
Okay.
The fact that she doesn't come back.
Oh, that's what I'm looking at? Oh, dang. Okay. All right. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. All right.
Yeah.
Patrons are on it. That's why you got to like that.
Okay. So they think she's dead. Our patrons knew she was alive.
She was alive for a moment. Like, where did she go?
Regardless, there's still portal, time travel, whatever you want to call it. Ezra pulls her out from.
Yes.
Before what we just saw in our Discord channel.
So, like, I'm rewatching this part, and to me, it's like it's all dark. Vader has flown away. And, like, to me, this was almost kind of like a Jedi walking into the darkness, as in, like, I'm accepting death. That's maybe why I think I wasn't. Mm-hmm. She walks into the darkness and disappears in an almost all black Malachor, which makes sense. So I'm like, she's dead. That's kind of the point. They're trying to show that she died. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Either way.
Peculiar.
One BBY, Ezra pulls her through. Things continue. There's a scene at the very end of Rebels, which seems to be recreated in live action. There are like a half a dozen shots just in the trailer for the Ahsoka series that shows this, but not the one where, who knows how many years later, Ahsoka, you know, Gandalf the Grey style, has a cloak and a staff, and she's there waiting for Sabine, and they go off together, right?
Ahsoka the Grey.
We don't know what that year is. Maybe we'll find out in this series.
Yeah, there's. I mean, real quick, not really a speculation. I mean, her cloak is white in Rebels, and the scene we're talking about in the trailer, it's gray. So is Filoni just like, who cares, it's gray? Or is the end of Rebels set further in time?
Or it's just dusty gray, dusty white.
That's yeah. True. We only had so much budget for the renderings.
They only had that one texture.
Prepare to have the entire series ruined.
Right. So these are good points.
You know what they say, wrong color cloak, series ruined.
Right. Let the guy with the, you know, people screaming about the Leku being too long.
Right.
Short. I'm mad about this cloak. You know what I mean? As a guy who has a podcast about costumes, I'm really upset about this. I'm not going to Galaxy's Edge anymore because of that cloak.
You should get your Star Wars tattoos removed.
I'm done.
Roughly 9 ABY, 45 years old, she meets Grogu. Roughly 2 years later is what we're led to believe. Roughly 11 ABY, 47, visits Luke and Grogu at the Jedi Temple on Ossus, this planet with the construction droids, you know? And then, last live-action appearance, if you want to call it this, it's just a voice. This is actually Ashley Eckstein's voice, 35 ABY. Have no idea if she's alive or dead, where this voice is coming from, but she speaks to Rey through the Force at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, right before Rey stands up and defeats Palpatine.
Alive. The only one.
I vote alive.
Alive.
Same.
Speaking through the Force. Just like Luke, you know? But older. So those are kind of the big moments throughout her life. There's so much more, especially in that essential Ahsoka episodes playlist. There's, I want to say, 24 episodes. A lot of them, you know, it's multiple episodes because they're arcs. But each of them kind of speaks to like a quality that she has, where she stands up for something or she goes against orders and then, you know, either ends up being praised for it or something terrible happens. She gets framed for murder. She gets kicked out of the Jedi Order. There's like all these significant things. And I think they did a pretty good job of choosing episodes that kind of say things about her character. It might not give you the full story, but definitely watch it if that's all you can stomach is, you know, 12 hours of cartoons.
If that's all you can stomach.
If you want to know the knowledge, the info, go for it. If you want to feel attached, it's a little bit more work.
Agreed. All right, let's discuss a little bit more. We said kind of this stuff at the top, but let's talk a little bit more about like who she is in terms of Force users and especially like her place in the time of the fall of the Jedi. It's really interesting. Number one, she's very young, but also very wise and also very powerful. Given the fact that she faced off against Darth Vader later, she defeated Maul. She's done all this really major stuff. She seems like one of the most powerful Jedi. Like, I've never seen a ranking per se, but I don't know. What is she on, like, I don't know, those video games that the kids play? How is she ranked?
If we had a Dragon Ball Z scouter, would we say it's over 9,000? You know what I mean? When you're looking at her, it could be.
I don't know what any of those words mean.
Well, that's for us. That's for us young millennials. I'm not a young millennial.
Let's rethink that.
The Discord will like that, though, as I'm just saying.
Like we said, kind of the central character in Clone Wars and central to Anakin's character development, because the wrong Jedi arc that we talked about, where she gets kicked out of the Order, when they ask her to come back, it's there in the council chamber with Anakin and the rest of the council. It's great animation, too. Like, the expressions on her face, everything's just so, so genuine, so legit, again, for a cartoon. The skepticism and frustration with even being offered to come back by Yoda is just plain as day on her face. And she says to Anakin, not to the rest of the council, "I'm sorry, but I'm not coming back." And it was like such a great choice to have her say that to him. Like, she doesn't even address the rest of them. After it goes down, she speaks with him directly and then walks out. And then they go have this discussion and outside the temple. And he talks about how he understands so well what it's like to want to leave the Jedi Order. And this is bringing in the implications of his relationship with Padme and the stuff with Obi-Wan and who knows what other baggage from him growing up a slave. There's stuff that, you know, they address about that in the series where she's directly part of the conversation. I think with Padme, right? They're talking about that history. So all of this contributes directly to Anakin's fall. And now that we're talking about this and I'm thinking about it, like, it adds such an extra brutal layer of tragedy that when she does come back, he gives her lightsabers back and he's upgraded them and she goes on to lead these troopers and goes through all this shit. And like, for a second, it seems like we all know how it's going to turn out, but for a second, it seems like it could go well, but it's too little too late.
Right.
So it's just extra brutal, but it's all tied in. It's all part of the long fall. And man, not that over time we wouldn't have grown to love the prequels more, but it's stuff like this that really makes it what it is.
Filled in a lot of stuff. I think too, like, they made a point of her when she meets Trace and Rafa. Mm-hmm. She meets the Martez sisters and she hears their story of why they feel like, I mean, their story is tragic in their own ways. Like, our parents died in an accident. The Jedi came in, destroyed. Like, you know, not, and Ahsoka is kind of like listening, being like, ugh, because, you know, another happy landing kills so many people in the process of them achieving their goal, right? Which is like, you know, the Mace
Avenger Windu style.
100%. Like the Mace Windu school of get it done by any means necessary, right? And so she is, when you meet the Martez sisters and her relationship with them, you know, she's obviously in hiding, she's trying to be as low key as possible. And she hears this story of like people being like, the Jedi came in and essentially ruined our lives and we're supposed to praise them. And then look what happened to them. And she's just kind of sitting here being like, yeah, you're right. You're right. You know,
add it to the list.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I got a bone to pick with them too. But it's really, I think it's such an incredible character development for her to really kind of be at the mercy of literally what happened to this organization in so many ways of it failing her, which I think is interesting, right? Because so many of the decisions that she makes aren't actually her choice versus Anakin Skywalker is making choices himself. So it's kind of like an interesting dynamic of her choice to leave, again, comes on by principle of her being like, I have to stand up for what's right. My character was attempted, the assassination of my character was attempted here by, I'll leave that. We're not going to spoil that. But we know who did it. We know that I was set up, blah, blah, blah. And then her walking away from it, again, it's almost like not her choice. A lot of the things that happen to her are not her choice versus the opposite side of her master, Anakin, being the one who like intentionally makes the decisions that lead him to his path, which is interesting.
Yeah. And Stacey in the Discord chat is making a great point here that she was strong enough to walk away and not like Anakin not having the strength and being able to walk away because of his attachment issues or his need to like have everything and control, and you know, he's lost so much, so he probably can't give up anything. He has to try to keep all of it. You know, he needs to be a Jedi, he needs to have Padme, he needs to have everything. That shows the big difference in their characters, even though they're so similar. And that leads to the next thing that we talked about before, about how she really is like she really embodies like everything that a Jedi should be, or that we like imagine a Jedi is. If you take out everything in the prequels with the fall of the Jedi at the, you know, at the peak of their power right before everything went to shit, all of their clouded judgment. If you said, here's what a Jedi should be, Ahsoka kind of checks all the boxes. Compassion first, always helping people. There's a great quote about, we help people, that's what we do.
Right.
First, I would butcher the actual quote, but you know, she's always looking for like for the nuance in situations. She's bound to kind of that duty to help people over dogma or tradition. And she's devoted to her friends and the people she loves in like really meaningful ways, not just in a loyalty, no matter what. Just, you know, like she still believed in Anakin. She still believed that there was something in there, even though she knew she had to fight him. Right. Like, so it's not like it's shady loyalty, but it's that deep, like heartfelt loyalty that makes her special.
But also, is she a representation of a person who does things, who idealizes, who when an idea is formed and they say, we're looking for like the perfect person to embody this, mm-hmm. that those people oftentimes get swallowed up by how shitty the world is, right? Like you have you have someone who could be at the middle tier of the best foundation, nonprofit charity organization that is sitting there being like, I feel like I'm doing the mission that we're supposed to be doing, right? And then you go up at the top and people are stealing money and people are mm-hmm. funneling it and you know, funding political you know, like there's so much of that that she represented, like you said, she almost represented exactly what the Jedi Order was supposed to be. And I think the interesting part about that, of course, is that Yoda sees this mm-hmm. and understands that. And that's why their relationship was very interesting. It's part of his own personal exile of being like, I need to go. I realize like we're too far gone at this point.
Right.
And it's such an interesting dynamic because he plays such a crucial role, I think, in her establishing. It's almost like he reconfirms with her of like, you need to trust in the Force, right? That's the main thing that brings us together, because like he recognizes too, the Order has served in a former Catholic school way, like the Order begins to serve the flesh, right? That's what we call it, which is weird to say. but the part of it, of course, is that eventually, like what happens is the order, we know the story, sides and ends up becoming the saber of the galaxy, right? And so with that, by default, it's going to be opened up for corruption and going to be up for deception and all that kind of thing. So Yoda sees this. I think that's a really important, we could probably have when we do a character profile on Yoda, that would be a pretty interesting connection between Yoda and Ahsoka too. So something to think about.
I feel like with any great, like, whatever you want to talk about, government, order, anything, any idea, it needs to have a foundation, but then progress past that to become sustainable. Right. So the Jedi Order, we see the very end of it. And it's, you know, dogmatic. It's being manipulated, obviously, at the same time. But someone like Ahsoka is really the next generation. It should be the progression past what the council is. And she just doesn't get a chance to do that necessarily, because Palpatine's plan is beyond done. It's just more about the, you know, basically WWE terms, it's the finishing move. You know, it's
the people's elbow.
Yeah, the People's Order 66.
It'll be interesting to see if there's any Yoda-Ahsoka interaction in anything we get in the future, even if it's just like speaking through the Force in the series or something, because it seems like maybe he learns some things along the way that inform how he deals with Luke and Rey. You know, the old, we are what they grow beyond kind of thing.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Like, how did he come to that conclusion aside from... I mean, Luke, his experience with Luke says a lot, but...
And there is a reason why they threw that in the trailer, right? Mm. The burden of all masters is what they grow beyond, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So because we have Sabine, we have like, and that's the thing. It's like, we'll get into that as the show goes on. But I think the point of like what makes her character so interesting in this regard is like, she represents a lot of like carrying on the Jedi Order and then choosing what to leave and what to bring forward with her. Right. So,
right.
Her perspective on things obviously is different, but you know, we know that there is, you know, there's only so many people who have gone to these force, what do we call them? Like, what do we call Mortis? We're
like using a force nexus.
Yeah. Force. Right. And we know that yeah. Dagobah is like that too. So there is, again, like there's like the Yoda thing, Ahsoka, there's only so many people who have gone there. Anakin being the other one, he's who he is now, right? So you might not have many people besides Luke, right? So now we got this tie-in with Luke too. It's crucial character, like crucial character to where Star Wars is right now. It's amazing.
Yeah. Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt as the company who makes those rad all-over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They, of course, have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts. They do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
All right, let's do the Den of Antiquities. And Nick, this initial reaction thing, I feel like you should throw in the den, because this is some deeper stuff that maybe people who jumped in later aren't fully aware of. So let's just, let's get into it. Let's do the den.
For over 1,000 generations.
It is the Darksaber.
Run, Togosh.
It's a Kalikori.
A Sith Wayfinder.
Dark science. Cloning. Secrets only the Sith knew.
What do we got here in the cozy little Den of Antiquities, Nick?
Well, let's start with this initial reaction to the character based upon the movie The Clone Wars. The character was unpopular, and there was vocal criticism from Ahsoka's debut in the movie and also in season one of The Clone Wars. What's interesting is some of the critiques of Ahsoka's traits were that she was reckless, disobedient, whiny, childlike, mostly... You could kind of put this all under the umbrella. The haters just basically didn't like that she was a female teenager, because you could absolutely describe Anakin and Luke with all of those same words.
100%.
Kylo Ren.
And again, it's, even though it was 2007, 2008, whatever it was, it's a vocal minority who are just haters.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked to hear this. Nick, frankly, this is actually the first time I've heard this.
Probably the same people who complain about everything today.
Right.
Just unhappy people. But the Clone Wars, this was, I pulled this from Ashley Eckstein interview at C2E2. The Clone Wars was being created one season ahead of what was on air at the time. So season two was being made while season one was airing and Ahsoka was getting ripped on. And Ashley said that she knew everyone would see what she saw if they just gave it some time. So she was right.
But meanwhile, she was legitimately depressed and like
words hurt,
going through hell because of people. Mm-hmm. She posted about that recently, talking about crying into her cheesecake as she watched the hate come in. And
yeah,
I love that was like the quote that they used as like the headline.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, cool.
But then, like, seriously, like, words matter. Like Jake Lloyd, Ahmed Best, this Ashley Eckstein. Like, do you really want your job to drive you into tears when you're just out there trying to create and like make people happy?
Tell him
you're
trying.
And like just create entertainment.
Yeah. Do what you love. Yeah.
Well,
people are cool.
Yeah. Star Wars fans.
Come on.
Let's talk about fun stuff now.
Yeah. We've covered this before, but to reiterate, Ashla was her original name given by George Lucas. Mm-hmm. It was also, Ashla was an early name for the Force in George's notes.
Dig it.
This I'm just learning. Adam, I don't know if you have any more to add to this, but Ashla is a Lasat word for the Force. I don't think, did we ever cover that? I don't know if I remember that.
We may have, but it may be talked about in the same, like around the same arc as the next thing you're about to read.
Mm-hmm. So Bendu also refers to the Force as the Ashla.
The Ashla and the Bogan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dark and light sides. Mm-hmm. And Bendu is an important Force user, important character in Rebels. Mm-hmm. It's another big swing arc-wise.
You know, I was just going to say, like, yep.
Style of what the Force means in this version versus, mm-hmm. you know, the swashbuckling lightsaber version that we classically know.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's something interesting, too. Ashla is an old English translation that means an ash meadow. Mm-hmm. And a meadow would be identified by the fact that it has an ash tree growing, but usually with a single tree as its life force.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
That's pretty rad, right?
Cool.
There's also, there's another step in this name change thing that I forgot to put in here. The replacement for Ashla as the name of the character was actually Ashoka, spelled A-S-H-O-K-A.
Which I misspell all the time.
Yeah, everyone does.
Fingers, keyboards.
I mean, mostly blame Siri.
Yeah. But Ashoka is like an Indian god from Indian mythology. And not a nice god, from what I remember. I heard something about it today. But one of the other writers, Gilroy, what's his first name?
Tony?
Said, hey, let's flip those letters and make it completely her own. Let's not fully recycle a name, you know? Mm-hmm.
Henry.
That's cool.
Henry Gilroy.
Henry Gilroy. There we go. Nailed it.
A little bit more diving into Ahsoka's lightsaber style and the lightsabers in general. But Ahsoka used form... Five lightsaber combat style. Form five was physically demanding style, calling on the user to quickly transition from a dedicated defensive stance to an all-out attack. Both strength and speed were required to immediately follow up a block with a powerful series of strikes before enemies could prepare their own defense. Pulled that right out of my brain, and I wasn't reading that off the internet at all.
Yeah, take that, Maul.
So going into her lightsabers, because she had kind of quite a few, actually, when you think about it. At first, as a real young Padawan, she used a single green blade. Later on, she built a secondary Shoto blade with that had a little bit more of a yellowish green tint to use alongside her primary green blade. In the season 5 first finale, when she was leaving the Jedi Order, she left her sabers in their possession, and Anakin kept them and improved them,
air quotes,
before giving them back to her towards the end of the Clone Wars. And the updated sabers had blue blades similar to Anakin's. Nice and pretty.
I've always loved those hilts. I like the samurai style newer ones, but there's something about like that big heavy pommel and then the emitter that looks like a version of the Graflex. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of my favorite designs.
So do you think we're going to get a little throwback to where the white blades came from?
I hope so.
Is that in there? Someone's going to go, they explained that in the book and I didn't read it. Is it in the book? Do we understand that? Do we get that?
They're purified from an Inquisitor's crystals.
I vaguely remember. I think it is. There's an explanation out there.
They rebalance it. They did that in the Light of the Jedi and canonized it.
Tight. I approve. Hear that, Lucasfilm? You have my approval.
So, at the end of the Clone Wars, Ahsoka left both of her sabers at the crash site of the Venator-class Star Destroyer, which were later discovered by Darth Vader. And then sometime after the events of the Clone Wars, but before we see her again in Rebels, she built new curved lightsaber hilts that had the white blades you guys are talking about.
Katana style.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Or, no, katanas aren't curved. Katanas are straight. Which ones are curved?
No, katanas are curved, aren't they?
The blades are curved a little, but the hilts are straight. Either way, it is some Japanese style hilt.
Yes, they're curved, the whole thing.
Hold up.
Nice.
Physics buddy Joe here is saying the audiobook of the Ahsoka novel is read by Ashley.
You're going to have to listen to that.
I'm getting that. I'm going straight to Audible right now.
You're buying that right now.
Anything else in the den, Nick?
That's it.
All right.
Man, Ahsoka Tano.
Let's do some I Love You, I Know. Sorry to spring this on everybody. Maybe we'll read some comments, but we're going to have to pick our favorite Ahsoka scene, episode, or quote, whatever you guys want.
I love you.
I know.
All right, we have some quotes from patrons back here, pretty deep.
Some of them are Ashley quotes, some of them are Soka quotes, if I'm reading them correctly.
Well, yeah, amidst those, some folks put in some things about stuff that they love. I was also just looking for a good Ahsoka quote or Ashley quote for the quote of the week, because we haven't done that in a while, but there's some good insight here into what people feel, what they, you know, what they love about the character. So we could read this. Maybe Zach the Maker has a good one right here.
I'll read a quote.
Do it.
"You don't have to carry a sword to be powerful. Some leader's strength is inspiring others."
It's a great quote.
I like it.
That's one of the title card quotes, right?
I believe so.
Nice.
Another quote.
Sure.
Juicebox is hooking it up. "You don't have to look tough to be tough."
I think she looks kind of tough, though.
I think she's tough as hell, so I'm going to go ahead and say we're not going to do that one. But I would say probably the one that makes me sad, but gives me hope for the series: "The Republic couldn't have asked for better soldiers, nor I a better friend." We can all collectively cry together with that quote.
Yeah.
I'd love to do one of Ashley talking about Ahsoka and what Ahsoka means. Zach the Maker brings it up. "People ask me all the time, why do you care about Ahsoka Tano so much? And my answer is because I care about people so much. Ahsoka helps people no matter what. It's rare to have a character that changes people's lives, that brings people together. Ahsoka unites fans, and I believe she represents all that is good and all that we hope to be. She represents the best of ourselves, the light inside of our hearts, the hope in our souls." And I really like this ending line here. "She proves that despite the darkness, despite tough times, we can always walk away, choose a different path, and do what's right."
Dude, I don't need to say any additional words.
Those words are correct.
I just pasted another one in the notes here. Jedi John gave us another quote from Ashley. Oh, when asked about her favorite Ahsoka moment.
This is Ashley saying this?
Yeah. Mike, you want to read it?
Sure. "When asked about her favorite Ahsoka moment, it would be season 5 finale of Star Wars The Clone Wars, where Ahsoka walks away from the Jedi Order. Because it's actually that moment that I felt like Ahsoka transcended from a character that we all loved into an icon, that we all aspire to be. That was that moment. It was her showing her courage and bravery and strength and hope and trust in herself to walk away from everything that she knew towards the light. If you look at that scene, she's walking away from the darkness and towards the light, walking away from a situation where she knew was toxic, where she knew she wasn't being treated right, towards a new future, or, as she says, a new dawn." Dig it.
Yeah. Yep. Here come the tears.
Pretty emo,
it's
dude.
Really good.
Pretty emo. Feels good. Feels good.
What about you guys? Nick, what's your favorite Ahsoka moment or episode or quote?
Tough to choose from. I'm going to go a little bit, not totally old school Clone Wars, not new school. I mean, new school, seeing Ahsoka with Luke and Grogu. I mean, come on. Unreal.
Yeah.
I really think her biggest moment to me in animation is meeting Vader at the end of season 2 in Rebels. Yeah. I mean, that's full circle. It takes a lot for her to really in that moment see that it is Anakin, and then also just kind of decide that he's gone and it isn't Anakin, even though you see his face a little bit. I mean, that's some real full circle, real heavy stuff to still need to battle. I don't know what I would even do in that position.
But I think to jump in on that, because that was the moment that I was going to say too, but I think like you look at that moment too, and you think of he tries to manipulate her in the ways that he used to do, right? And this idea of like Anakin Skywalker, I always thought it was like ironic that like Anakin Skywalker would like get mad at Ahsoka Tano about anything, right? Because I'm like, dude, really? Like, I'm like, the kettle is black, man. That is pitch black, right? But it's interesting about the way that he says it in "I will avenge him," and revenge is not the Jedi way, right? So he's like automatically calling out all of her core principles to try and be like, you don't even know what you're supposed to do. Like, you are so conflicted. You are so torn of what the Jedi wants to tell you this, but they do something different. Like, he's just going back to that old well of like her questioning herself, right? And then for her to say, I am no Jedi, is such a like 1-2 punch of her being like, you cannot control me anymore in the way that like you think it's working for you. And also, I am not your failure, right? I am like, and it's poetic in that way. But that moment, I think for me too, is like, that was where I recognized the power of Ahsoka Tano in that regard, of, because I'm one of those weirdos that watched Rebels before I watched Clone Wars, just because it seemed like I was like, you know, snowball effect. I'm like, what can I watch first? There's less seasons of this. I can watch
that. Right.
So for me to get this sense of Fulcrum, she comes onto the screen and I'm sure people were gasping. And I was like, oh, I know that's Ahsoka Tano because I'm into Star Wars, but like, this is cool.
Yeah.
Retroactively going back and like learning all this stuff, I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing. So I think, but that moment was truly in I would say mirroring certainly her walking away from the Order. I think that was an incredible display of the future of the Jedi in their own way, because she was someone who had lived it. She went up against what the Jedi had turned into in Darth Vader, and for her to stare at him and avenge the idea of like what her former master would have stood for, it's like, that's pretty rad. I thought that is peak Ahsoka Tano.
Does he say anything in that scene about her leaving and the implications for him, or is it just cold Vader style the majority of the time?
I think that's it. Let me pull the quote up though.
Because the idea, like, I've always thought about how, trying to think in a real world sense, where, how far a person has to get, how far removed from reality they have to get to really fully turn on friends and family and, you know, people that they loved in the way that Sith do in these kind of stories. And she was the one person that I feel like would be the hardest for him to turn against, you know, other than Padme in A Moment of Rage, right? But even if he didn't feel the full impact of it on like a personal abandonment level in season 5, her leaving has to have, in all the time that he spent toiling and through life and just in, you know, suffering in that suit, had to have gone back to that over and over and over. Like, she left me too. It was their fault, but then she abandoned me too.
Well, if we read the dialogue, and I know we're going to wrap up here, but like the dialogue that they say is actually a little bit deeper than I thought originally when I remember it, just because the last lines are like so hammered. That's like obviously what you stick with, right? Mm-hmm. But Vader says, perhaps I was wrong, and then goes to you know, slash Ezra. And Ahsoka says, it wouldn't be the first time. Dig, right? Darth Vader says, I was foretold that you would come here. Our long-awaited meeting has come at last. Ahsoka says, I'm glad I gave you something to look forward to. Vader replies, we need not be adversaries. The Empire will show you mercy if you tell me where the remaining Jedi can be found. So, like, at this point, he's kind of like being like, I know that she's good because I trained her. Like, He knows that she's not someone to mess with.
Right.
And Ahsoka says, there's no more Jedi. You and your Inquisitors have seen to that. Vader says, perhaps his child will divulge you that you will not. Ahsoka replies, I thought I knew who you were under that mask, but it's impossible. My master would never be so vile. Darth Vader doubles down, classic style. Anakin Skywalker's weak. I destroyed him. Again, a lie that he's telling himself to try and tap into the dark side of the Force. He does the same thing with Obi-Wan. Yeah. Obviously, we know it it ended similarly. And then I will avenge his death. Revenge is not the Jedi way. I am no Jedi. So, I mean, like, it's classic cold Vader, but at the same time, like, he's definitely, she knows, he knows. He's like, let's do the damn thing if you're just not going to listen to me.
Yeah.
Snips.
I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed, sir. All right, my favorite, sorry to just, I mean, that last arc of Clone Wars is just some of the best Star Wars, period. But I can't stop going back to the season 5 finale. Same thing. I just love the pain. It's just, it's really, really, if nothing else, it's like, as I'm feeling the emotions, I'm like impressed that they pulled off that level of a scene and that level of a story, and they've evoked that much emotion in, you know, 2012 or whatever it was with the CG cartoon. It's just damn impressive. And for all the reasons we talked about, that was like her biggest moment. It was like kind of her lifetime defining moment. So that's got to be it. I don't think there's any, there are plenty of great quotes, but that scene, just two scenes really, right? So that'll be my favorite episode. And then the council scene and then outside the temple, that sequence, I guess.
I wonder what, I know we touch on it here and there, but I mean, the Clone Wars was up until that point, I mean, I guess technically it kind of still is, the longest form storytelling of Star Wars, right? So I really wonder what percent of the emotional heaviness just has to do with the fact that you spend a lot of time with the characters. Because there's inconsequential stuff to the overall saga in the Clone Wars, but you do at the end of like the end of season 5, the original first ending, you've spent 5 years with them.
Right.
So it really, I feel like there's got to be some percent, some equation, however you want to put it, that just legitimately spending time with the characters makes you feel for them. So
for sure,
they wrote something huge, a huge ending, an emotional ending, but you spend a chunk of your life with them. That's going to add, you know, that's going to kind of grade your emotions on a curve almost.
Well, think about the finale of Lost. It was great. But if you did it at the end of season 1 or you did it 5 episodes in, it's like, oh, that's really sad. But after
we had to go back.
seven seasons or whatever, I was losing my mind. So, yeah, I think you're completely right. All right, shall we do anything else or wrap it up? Let's wrap it up. I have a bus call in 3 hours.
Where will you be next week when we have to record?
I'll be back in the Poconos with that same setup. Great internet connection. It'll be good. I'll have all day to set up.
Hell yeah.
Nick, where will you be?
Right here, baby. Actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
If anything, I might be right here. But if I'm not right here, I'll just be like 20 feet that way in potentially a new podcast studio.
Sick. Ooh, Studio 2.0 backyard studio. Yeah.
It'll take a miracle for it to be done by next Wednesday, but hey, maybe.
Force works in mysterious ways.
That's right.
All right. If you've been listening this whole time, did you know you can also watch us on YouTube? Lots of people are watching. Even if you're not like an avid YouTube podcast watcher, please subscribe. It helps us. Once we get to a certain point, we can monetize and we can do all these things that are proving harder because we're an audio first podcast. So until we get into like all kinds of legit YouTube content, it's slow going, but we appreciate the support. Patrons make this whole thing possible. Patreon.com/thanktomakerpod is where you can go if you want to support us directly, financially. We'd appreciate that a lot. You can get an ad-free feed of the podcast, exclusive merch, Discord access, exclusive content. There's some older exclusive content there. And when we start covering shows, we'll be doing some after-show stuff and some more exclusive stuff that makes more sense during a show run rather than these kind of random one-off topics and things. So patreon.com/thanktomakerpod. Follow us on socials. You can find all that in the show notes. And Mosh Eisley updates are coming soon. We announced the date. We're doing New York during New York Comic Con. What is it, the 14th of October?
Yep.
Oh, baby.
During spooky season. Details coming soon. Mike's making graphics. At least that's what he's telling the group.
Yep, I did. I said that. And I've been doing them the whole time. I've been talking to you guys.
Debut them. Demo. Let's hear that demo, Mike.
Cancel everything else you're doing and only do that.
Sure. Yes.
That's the way life works. All right. Viewers, listeners, thanks for being with us. Again, subscribe. Hit the button. Smash it. Kick it. Punch it. Whatever you do to a button.
Bop it.
Dudes, thanks for hanging. Patrons, thanks for being here with us. And until next week, truly, I do want to wish you... I can't think of a joke. May the Force be with you. If you enjoy Thank the Maker, you can support us by following and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or you can support us directly at patreon.com/thankthemakerpod where you can get access to our Discord server, exclusive content, exclusive merch, our recording live stream, and more. Our patrons quite literally make Thank the Maker possible.